presenters. Carla Riley is a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Clinical Scholar at Yale University and a clinical instructor in pediatric critical care medicine at Yale New Haven Children's Hospital. She received her medical degree from Northwestern, master's in public policy from UCLA, and completed her clinical training at Children's Hospital in Los Angeles and Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. Britta Roy is also an RWJ clinical scholar at Yale. She is also a clinical instructor in the section of general internal medicine at Yale School of Medicine and the VA health system in Connecticut. She completed a master's in biomedical engineering at Wayne State, her medical degree and MPH at University of Michigan, and her clinical training at University of Alabama in Birmingham. Thank you so much, and please welcome them.
Thank you for the kind introduction, and Carly and I are really very excited to be able to present our collaborative work on using the framework of community resilience in order to mitigate gun violence. We have no conflicts of interest to disclose. So we will begin by presenting our background and theory behind our work, followed by our methodology and initial results. We're then also very excited to describe our current intervention and immediate next steps, and we'll follow with concluding remarks. So like many cities across the United States, New Haven struggles with gun violence. Between 2000 and 2010, New Haven experienced very high rates of homicide, with the homicide rate actually tripling over the past 5 years. So while Greater New Haven experienced a violent crime rate total of about 4 per 1,000 residents, certain neighborhoods bore a much greater burden. Some neighborhoods had a violent crime rate of 30 per 1,000 residents. You can see on this map the darker areas represent the areas with the highest rates of violent crime. And not surprisingly, these are areas where more minorities tend to live and where community members are more disenfranchised. This really creates chronic community-level trauma and stress and undermines the health, capacity, and productivity of these neighborhoods. So highlighted on the map are two neighborhoods in which we are actively focusing our efforts, New Hallville and West River. And over the years, while there have been many police-led and government-led responses to gun violence, they're often focused on the victim or the criminal. But no effort has been led by the community to really tackle the effects that living in chronic and persistent gun violence has on its members. So our community convened around this charged issue of gun violence, and we created a community health violence prevention group. And as you can see, this group really included individuals from a broad range of organizations, including government, health, education, and community residents themselves. And it was during these conversations that we realized that our community, like most others, would quickly convene in response to a natural disaster. However, no one comes out in response to gun violence, even though we framed it as a chronic man-made disaster. So we then looked to the natural disaster literature and actually connected with Anita and some of her group at RAND. And this framework that they developed of community resilience really resonated with our community and with our group. And as Anita mentioned earlier, this framework really has community members strengthen themselves by building resilience through 8 different levers on your right. Our community chose to focus on the levers of engagement and self-sufficiency in order to create more social connectedness as our way of building community resilience. So as a result, the Large Violence Prevention Group created a subcommittee called the Community Resilience Steering Committee, and they were really comprised of community and academic stakeholders, and their major effort was to both oversee the resilience building efforts and also to guide the research endeavor evaluating this. So acknowledging that our community wanted to focus on the levers of engagement and self-sufficiency to build the core component of social connectedness, we examined related measurable constructs of social cohesion and collective efficacy. And Amy defined these in her introduction, but social cohesion, to remind you, represents the bonds between the community members. And collective efficacy is really the ability of the community members to come together and leverage these social ties on their own behalf. So this is the first question that our group wanted to examine. Are social cohesion and collective efficacy associated with exposure to gun violence in high violence areas of New Haven? And knowing that we plan to intervene, we also aim to determine whether actually increasing social cohesion and collective efficacy will decrease gun violence in these same areas. So we came up with a pre-post study design. In the pre-intervention phase, we examined our first question, which we completed last summer. And now we're currently in the intervention phase, actively building resilience in the neighborhoods in which we survey. And we'll return to these same neighborhoods next summer to again measure social cohesion, collective efficacy, and exposure to gun violence. So throughout this entire process, from concept through dissemination, we're really taking a true community-based participatory research approach. Our group developed a 55-item instrument, which included the SAMHSA Collective Efficacy Scale, which also incorporates social cohesion. We also included a measure of exposure to violence. And finally, we included unique questions of particular interest to our community, which we plan to utilize in developing our intervention. So to obtain data from the neighborhoods in which we were currently focused, we trained 17 community members in research methodology and survey administration so they could go back to their neighborhoods and gather data from their neighbors on their own doorsteps. And this not only honors CBPR principles, but also really built capacity within these neighborhoods. We then designed a sampling frame within the two neighborhoods, specific areas that we hypothesized were low cohesion, high violence areas. Within the sampling frames, we identified addresses we wanted to survey using a random walk methodology, and then we surveyed from May to August of this year. So in the pre-intervention phase of our study, we have produced descriptive results and we've examined associations. And once we have data from our post-intervention phase, we will be able to perform a difference in difference analysis. So now Carly will present the results from our pre-intervention phase.
Thank you. Before I share the results of our first survey, we really wanted to emphasize today that the results and really the process by which we've obtained these results are not only academically valuable, but they've also possessed really deep intrinsic value to the community and the community members themselves. And in our first survey, we have visited 300 addresses to obtain 153 surveys, essentially divided evenly between the two neighborhoods within which we are currently working, with a remarkably low refusal rate. And likely this is a result of the community-based participatory research approach, as well as the real relevance of this topic to the community. These are the four items within the social cohesion scale to which respondents reply using a 5-point Likert scale. Let us focus our attention on the top and bottom items. While only one out of four respondents either agreed or strongly agreed that people in their neighborhood could be trusted, a full 60% thought that people in their neighborhood were willing to help other neighbors. Now, looking at several other items within the full collective efficacy scale, I will again draw your attention to the bottom two items in particular. Essentially, half of respondents thought it likely or very likely in these neighborhoods that neighbors would intervene if there was a fight in front of their house, and more than half thought neighbors would intervene if the local fire station was threatened by budget cuts. Now, here are four of the many questions from the exposure to violence scale. Almost all of our respondents had heard a gunshot. Two-thirds of them had a friend or family member hurt by a violent act, while nearly 60% had a friend or family member killed. Moreover, one out of every three respondents had been physically present when someone was shot. Now, here are the results of our regression analysis. Both of our independent variables of social cohesion and collective efficacy are inversely associated with exposure to violence. And now these are a few of the items of interest to our community members as they and we consider potential opportunities for intervention. A few topics are represented within these questions. The first item is really one of several that we asked that addresses family preparedness. The second addresses the issue of sort of a long-standing, complicated nature of the police-community relationship within these communities. And the bottom two examine burial insurance. This is a priority issue in these neighborhoods in which in recent years, families have been unable to afford to bury their very own family members. Our initial results have limitations. Though community members 18 years of age and older were eligible to participate, the vast majority of respondents were between the ages of 25 and 64 years of age. We were only able to administer the survey in English, and we were geographically limited in this study to the two areas within New Haven within which we are currently focusing. And then because our analysis was from the first phase of this study is really a cross-sectional one, we're not able to determine directionality or causation at this time. So now results from our first phase are really informing ongoing intervention that's occurring now. They confirm the hypothesized relationship between the two levers of interest and exposure to violence. And then with this understanding, we are now actively engaging in building social cohesion and collective efficacy within these neighborhoods. The Community Resilience Steering Committee, which Brita described earlier, supported the creation of community resilience teams, or CRTs, in the two neighborhoods in which we have been focused, New Hallville and West River. CRTs are grassroots efforts of volunteer community members who are engaged in building social cohesion, making their neighborhoods better places to live. What are they actually doing? Well, CRTs are continually working right now to cultivate local leadership within areas of New Haven that have been largely given up on as lacking any real leadership or potential. They are also distributing 5,000 community resilience handbooks and toolkits, which were designed and produced through our academic community partnership. The purpose of the handbook is to provide information and ideas to be used by residents and families to prepare for and respond to community violence. We have a couple of copies with us if you'd like to take a look at them after the session. The teams are also meeting regularly in their communities with local leadership, law enforcement, and community residents at the same table. They are working tirelessly to build social ties within their own neighborhoods, knocking on doors, engaging in conversation on the streets and at the markets. They also organize community events and connect with local organizations, often tabling at others' events. And importantly, the CRTs are also collaborating with Youth Haven, which is a local effort engaging adolescents from high-risk backgrounds around the issues of gun violence. Our immediate next steps. They involve disseminating data, the community's own data, back to the communities we surveyed over the summer and building social cohesion in these areas. In the picture on your left, you can see two dedicated CRT members wearing their CRT gear going door to door, introducing themselves, distributing toolkits, and also distributing their contact information. We're also working to keep stakeholders at the table, increase CRT membership, and broaden their networks. In the photograph on the bottom right, you can see the mayor, the superintendent, the police, and youth services all engaged together at the same table around this issue. The CRTs are engaging in multiple efforts to ensure not only the greatest impact, but also sustainability. They are maintaining their integrity in representing and being responsive to their own communities. They're growing their membership and developing communication strategies. And as a result, they are being increasingly recognized by the city, the university, and local businesses and organizations. They're also seeking longer-term sources of funding. And all of this is so that the CRTs can accomplish their mission in their logo, putting neighbor back in hood. As you can imagine, this work would not have been possible without a true academic community partnership. We thank our steering committee and the community survey team for their steadfast commitment and hard work. This work also could not have been possible without lots and lots and lots of other people and organizations, including support from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and countless others within Yale University and across New Haven. Thank you very much.